And the mics are hot here at Fandom Radio Podcast. That's right, boys and girls, we're getting right into my favorite Toho film of all time, King Kong Escapes. Like I said, this is my favorite Toho film of all time, and I'll get into why in a little bit. But first, according to Wiki, quick plot, okay, three paragraphs. I'm not going to bother explaining the plot because this can do it better than I could ever do it. An evil genius named Doctor Who creates Mechanikong, a robotic version of King Kong, to dig for a highly radioactive element X found only at the North Pole. Mechanikong enters an ice cave and begins to dig into the glacier, but the radiation destroys his brain circuits and the robot shuts down. Who then sets his sights on getting the real Kong to finish the job, who is taken to task by a beautiful female observer, Madame Piranha. Her country's government is financing the Doctor's schemes, and she frequently berates him for his failure to get results. Meanwhile, a submarine commanded by Carl Nelson arrives on Mondo Island, where the legendary King Kong lives. Much like the original 33 film, the giant ape gets into an intense fight with a dinosaur, a large serpent, and falls in love with a female human. In this case, Lieutenant Susan Watson, played by Linda Miller, following in the footsteps of Fay Wray. Okay, that's not actually following in the footsteps of Fay Wray. That's like a mile back behind Fay Wray. Doctor Who subsequently goes to Mondo Island, abducts Kong, and brings him back to the base at the North Pole. Kong is hypnotized by a flashing light device and fitted with a radioactive earpiece. Radio earpiece. Who commands Kong to retrieve the Element X from the cave. Apparently, Kong understands English perfectly. Problems with the earpiece ensue, and Who has to kidnap Susan Watson, the only person who can control Kong. After Watson and her fellow officers are captured by Who, Madame Piranha unsuccessfully tries to seduce Nelson to bring him over to her side. Eventually, Kong escapes and swims all the way to Japan, where the climatic battle with Mechanikong transpires. Standing in for the Empire State Building from the original film is the Tokyo Tower, where the two giants face off in the finale. Yeah, well, in a nutshell, that's King Kong Escapes. And like I said, my favorite Toho film. That is one crazy plot. And I think that's one of the reasons why I like this movie. It is absolutely so outlandish that you gotta love it. Okay, a couple of quick facts on the film. The film was released in Japan in 1967 and under the title King Kong's Counterattack. In June of 68, an edited version was released in theaters here in the U.S. Now, the genesis of this film is kind of interesting. I always thought it was really interesting. Basically, what you had is all the same guys who did all the Toho films in Japan, all the monster films, Toho monster films in Japan. So they got together and they did, you know, they just didn't do Godzilla movies, obviously did a lot of other movies, this being one of them. But anyway, after the tremendous success of King Kong vs. Godzilla, and it was, I believe to this day, it's still the most successful Godzilla film either here or in Japan. So after that tremendous success of King Kong vs. Godzilla, the producer of Toho, Tomioka Tanaka, he wanted to do another King Kong movie. In fact, he wanted to do a whole series of King Kong movies. And that would have been really interesting. That would have been really, really interesting. So what he did was he commissioned a script. He commissioned sets to be built, suits to be built, including a new Kong suit. Okay, he had everything in place. He's ready to go. He got this stuff being built. The only thing he didn't have is permission to use King Kong again. He had to get that from RKO General, who owned King Kong at the time. They owned the character of King Kong at the time. Okay. So now, while all of this was going on, there was a TV show on called The King Kong Show. It was a cartoon. If you've ever seen it, it's a very strange cartoon. I don't particularly care for it, and I'm a big King Kong fan. But for whatever reason, and I fail to understand what the reasons are, for whatever reason, RKO loved this cartoon, okay? This cartoon was produced by Arthur Rankin and Jules Bass, the guy who did all the stop-motion holiday specials. You know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, The Year Without a Santa Claus. I think they did Frosty the Snowman, too, but that was a cartoon. The Easter specials, you know, Here Comes Peter Cottontail, all that stuff. So they were producing this cartoon. Now, within the contract to produce this cartoon was an option for a feature-length movie. And Arthur Rankin was going to make that movie. He had a script written by William Keenan, big television writer, did a lot of television work. So basically, he had all that going on this side of the pond, and then over there, he had Japan wanting to do another King Kong movie. When they took the script over to RKO, Tanaka from Toho, they turned it down. They didn't like it. But Tanaka said, look, can I do one more film with King Kong just to recoup the costs of all they spent on the sets and the costumes and things like that? I said, yeah, but we would like you to use this script. And basically what RKO did is they put Rankin Bass together with Toho, okay? The result was King Kong Escapes, loosely based on the cartoon. There is an episode or two of the cartoon where Kong does fight a robot version of himself, and it's commanded by a Doctor Who. So it is loosely based on the cartoon. Okay, the film stars Rhodes Reason, Akira Takarada, Linda Miller, and Issei Amamoto, and Miyahama as Madame Piranha. You know, when it came to the Toho monster genres, if you could get Miyahama, Akira Takarada, and Issei Amamoto, then you got something there. Because other than Kumi Mizuno, that would be the only other actress that you would want to get in the movie. So they got all their... These were the, as far as the giant monster genre goes from Toho, these were some of their biggest stars. Arthur Rankin brought over Rhodes Reason to play the part of Commander Carl Nelson. And while he was over there, he spotted a model by the name of, she was on a magazine cover called Linda Miller. I don't think she had any acting experience at all. The only acting she ever did was she was an extra in The Green Slime. If you ever see the movie The Green Slime, if you look really, really close, there is a few quick shots of Linda Miller. Her hair's a little bit longer, it's a little bit darker, but it's definitely Linda Miller. As far as I know, they're the only two things she's ever done. She's done radio over there. I believe she co-hosted some kind of a game show, like a radio game show over in Japan. Her dad was a meteorologist for the Air Force, so she was stationed in Japan. And I've read interviews with her, and I've even tried to get in touch with her, but I've read interviews with her, and she really liked being over there. And she liked working on the movie. Everybody was really nice to her and everything. The problem is, you know, she's not a terribly good actor. We'll get into that. But for all accounts, she really liked being over there. And she was just a young girl. I think she was barely 21 when she did this. But another guy you got, Akira Takarada. I mean, this guy was a total package. I mean, this guy could sing. He could dance. And he plays Lieutenant Commander Jiro Nomura, basically the first officer of the submarine. I'm a big fan of Akira Takarada. Almost every movie he's ever, even some of his non-monster movies I've seen. And I really like Akira Takarada. And this, at this time, 1966, 65, when they were filming this guy was at the top of his game. Literally tall, dark, and handsome. He could sing. He could dance. He spoke not only Japanese, I understand he spoke Mandarin and a smattering of English. He could barely communicate with, he could communicate with his American co-stars. He was 30 years old, I believe, when this went into production. At 30 years old, he had already done 50 movies. 50! At 30 years old. I mean, Toho was a factory in those days, man. They just pumped this stuff out, all kinds of movies. As I mentioned, Rhodes Reason, big-time television star. I've seen him in Star Trek. I've seen him in The Time Tunnel. I believe I've seen him in one or two episodes of Twilight Zone. His brother, Rex Reason, is the star of This Island Earth. And people get them confused. They look very, very similar. Issei Amamoto did a lot of bit work for Toho. I know it was in All Monsters Attack, where he plays the toy inventor, the little kid's friend. But Issei Amamoto, his last film was GMK, Giant Monsters All Out Attack. And he passed away right after that. But Issei Amamoto, Miyahama, who had just come off of the James Bond film, You Only Live Twice. I believe her character's name was Kissy Suzuki. Looking oh so cute in this movie. I like Miyahama in this movie. Now, let's talk about, get right into the actors. I think for the most part, they do a pretty good job. You know, if there's two guys that are battling to tear up the scenery more than the other one, it's got to be Rhodes Reason and Issei Amamoto. But, you know, in a good way. You know, in a good way. I think they're both fine. I think Akira Takarada's fine. If there's one weak spot in the acting, it's got to be Linda Miller as Susan Watson. But you know what? I don't know if that's entirely her fault. because she, although she spoke English, was dubbed by an actress named Julie Bennett. And Julie Bennett was, she was a bit actress. She had done Adventures of Superman. She was in a couple episodes of Dragnet. I've seen her in a lot of old sitcoms, things like that. So I kind of give her a little bit of a pass because I don't think her performance, well, her lack of performance is entirely her fault. So I'm inclined to give her a pass, a pretty big pass, because I think a lot of it has to do with the dubbing. I think Julie Bennett's dubbing in it is just the syncing up with the mouth, you know, movement and everything. That's fine. It's just, you know, the way she carries on too much. That's what I don't care for. I think the weakness in her part might be due to the dubbing, not necessarily Linda Miller's acting. So I give her a big pass. Actually, Rhodes Reason dubbed himself. He actually dubbed himself in the movie. Doctor Who, Issei Yamamoto, was dubbed by Paul Frees. Big time voiceover actor. Big time. I remember hearing his voice, Rocky and Bullwinkle, I think he was the narrator. He is an actor. He does show up in films. I believe he was actually in The Thing from Another World, the Howard Hawks produced monster movie, the great Thing from Another World. I believe he's in that. But Akira Takarada, I cannot figure out. I looked and looked and looked. I could not find out who dubbed Takarada in this. And all my research before I did this, I couldn't find anything. But Kong was played by Haro Nakajima. And Mechanic Kong and Gorosaurus were played by Yu Sakita. So let's talk about the monsters. Let's get right into it. Let's talk about the monsters. Before I forget, we got to mention, I can't believe I almost glossed over this part. The film was directed by Ishiro Honda. Music by Akira Ifugabe. And special effects by Ijai Surabaya. Basically, and produced by Tomi Kanaka, like I mentioned. Basically, all the guys that did everything, all the monster movies, okay? They all got together and did this. So, right, like I said, let's talk about the monsters. Haro Nakajima playing Kong. Haro Nakajima was the monster actor, the suit actor for Toho. He was their go-to guy for giant monsters or suit work. He was their guy. And he was a little disappointed. He thought this was going to be one of his favorite roles, because when they were designing the suit, you know, he has to be there because they have to make sure it fits him. He thought that, kind of like in War of the Gargantuas, where you could see his eyes through the... Like he played Gyra in War of the Gargantuas also. You could see his eyes through the suit, through the mask. Well, he kind of thought that's the way they were going to do this suit for Kong, but they didn't. They gave him these big, dopey, doll-like blue eyes, so you really couldn't see. It turns out, from what I've read, that his favorite performance is War of the Gargantuas, because you could see his eyes through it, you know? But anyway, he played Kong, and I'll tell you what, I don't know what they were thinking with this suit. You know, I don't hate it, but it certainly is really, really bad. There's a couple of scenes when he's fighting Gorosaurus where you can actually see the back of the mask kind of flips up, you know, on the back of the shoulders. And I swear you could see a zipper, you know. There's one point in the when he's digging for the Element X, if you look really, really close, you could actually see little claws, metal claws they put on the end of his hands so he could dig. There were some parts and some scenes he had hand extensions on. There's a couple of good scenes where it kind of looks like an inverted triangle, the shape of the body. You know, just not the greatest of suits. Now, with that said, I swear there's a couple of scenes in here that remind me of the 33, especially the head sculpt of the mask, because they actually had a... They had a mechanical head for some of the shots, the close-ups. But when it was him wearing the mask, I swear there's a couple of scenes where they were trying to get it to look like the 33 Kong as much as they could. Is the one scene where he puts Linda Miller in the tree. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a good copy of the 33, but just the shape of the head, the way the mouth is open and things like it just looks like they're trying to get that look, you know, and whether or not they succeeded, probably not. But if there's just a couple of quick scenes where he's in profile, where it just, if you look it almost looks like they were modeling it after the 33, you know, stop motion model. Anyway, that's what I always thought. You know, the suit was covered in like a rabbit fur, I believe, when they did it. And, you know, it just looks kind of bad. The scene where he fights the, you know, the big snake in the water, that suit is actually the suit from, not the head, just the suit is from King Kong versus Godzilla. I guess they didn't want to get this suit wet. And it's, boy, I'll tell you, there's that scene when he's fighting that, that thing in the water, and man, if that doesn't look like a guy in a suit, nothing does, you know? And it's funny because the other two monsters, you got Gorosaurus and Mechanic Kong, I think they look terrific. I think Gorosaurus is one of the best suits they've ever made. It's a great looking suit. I think Gorosaurus is one of my, it's one of my favorite monsters to come out of the 60s anyway. You know, I think the suit looks really good, and, you know, it's convincing. That's a matter of opinion, I guess, but, you know, the Gorosaurus suit's really good. The Mechanic Kong suit, in my opinion, is one of their masterpieces at the time. At the time they were doing this, I think that Mechanic Kong suit's one of their masterpieces. I think it's really, really good. And I think the way Sakita plays it is really... I believe Sakita was the understudy for Nakajima. I think he was like one of the students or something like that. I'm not sure. But I think the Mechanic Kong suit is terrific. Yeah, and the weak point is, you know, the main star, Kong. I mean, it's just not a terribly good suit. Is it better than the King Kong versus Godzilla suit? I don't know, maybe. I think the King Kong versus Godzilla suit, Kong was supposed to be more menacing looking. Obviously, he's a lot bigger. Supposed to be a lot bigger. But the suit for King Kong Escapes was supposed to be not as frightening looking, I guess, you know, because he's got those big blue eyes, you know. Like I said, we got the three, you know, Gorosaurus, Mechanic Kong, Kong, you know, for the most part, they're pretty good. They're certainly no worse than any of the other stuff they've done, you know, since the 54, the original Godzilla. They're certainly no worse than any of that stuff. And in a lot of ways, they're better than some of the stuff that's come after it too, you know? But, yeah, I like the suits in this one. I'm not nuts about the Kong suit, but I really do like the other two suits, you know? Another thing that always stuck out to me with this film is, you know, you had, like I mentioned, you had Doctor Who, you had all the effects, everything that Toho was good at the time. Another thing I always liked about it is, and it goes along with the effects, is the scope, the size of this movie. If you look at some of the sets that are filmed in this movie, these are enormous sets, like miniature work, you know, Doctor Who's base, with the elevator that goes up and down. I mean, it's big. You know what I mean? The Mondo Island scene, you know, a huge set that they built for this film. And at night when they're going to, when Kong and Mechanic Kong fight I guess it's Hokkaido, when they climb Tokyo Tower, but the set is just enormous. This they spared no expense in this movie. I mean, I don't know what the budget was offhand, but They didn't skimp on anything. They didn't pull back on anything. You know what I mean? They showed us everything, and they did it on a big set. And that is another thing that always stuck with me with this. I think overall the reason I like, you know, this whole movie is one big cartoon with full of nothing but cartoon characters. But you know what? It's a good cartoon with good cartoon characters. You know, and that is one of the reasons why I always like this film. I think it's outlandish, it's crazy, and it can't help but be entertaining, okay? This is a great late-night movie. This is a great Saturday afternoon movie. If you have never seen King Kong Escapes, and it's out there, it's available, you can get it, and you're at all interested in the giant monster genre, the Toho stuff, I gotta check out King Kong Escapes. I have loved this movie from the first time I saw it, and I'll tell you the story of the first time I saw it. When I was a little kid, I always loved the monster movies, and there was this new technology that was sweeping the nation, and it was called cable, and we didn't have it, but my grandparents did, so a lot of times I'd go to my grandparents on the weekends to watch all these late-night movies. This is where I saw all the Hammer films. This is where I saw the Chiller Theater out of WPIX out of New York. This is where I saw so much stuff late night Fridays and Saturdays. But there was a host out of Philadelphia called Dr. Shock. And Dr. Shock would host Mad Theater and Horror Theater every Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon. I think it came on from 1 to 4. Each movie was an hour and a half. And I remember on Sundays getting the Sunday paper and going through to see what the movies were going to be on next weekend that I wanted to watch. And I watched I come across Dr. Shock Saturday afternoon. Mad Theater was showing King Kong versus Godzilla. Okay, I had seen that. You know, I know what that was about. But on Horror Theater, which came on at 3 o'clock, I guess it was, or 2:30. Yeah, 2:30 was King Kong Escapes. I'm like, what the heck is King Kong Escapes? I had seen the original. I had seen Son of Kong. I had seen Mighty Joe Young. I had seen King Kong versus Godzilla before. I don't believe the 76 remake was out. So I had no idea what King Kong Escapes was. Needless to say, I couldn't wait to see it. That week dragged on. Finally, next Saturday comes along. And I sat through King Kong versus Godzilla, loved it like I always did. And I got to admit, I have to be honest. When I saw the first couple minutes that it was a Toho film, I was disappointed. That disappointment only lasted a few minutes. Because once I saw that mechanical King Kong, which I think he shows up in the first 10 or 15 minutes, you knew where the movie was going. You knew where it was headed. That they were going to, even though we didn't even see King Kong yet, they were going to fight. And I knew them. And after that, bang, instant fan. I was an instant fan the minute I saw the minute that moment when I saw that mechanical King Kong and how cool he looked and everything like that. And all my life, I've always wanted a toy of that mechanical Kong. I never got one, but I knew where that movie was headed, and I became an instant fan. And this is probably close to 30 years ago, you know, and I'm still a huge fan of it. When in 2005, when Peter Jackson's remake of Kong came out, they re-released a double pack of King Kong vs. Godzilla, and for the first time, King Kong Escapes on DVD. Well, I came across it in a video store, I believe it was an FYE, and man, I tell you, the money couldn't leap out of the wallet fast enough. I could not wait to get home and throw it in and watch it. I had never seen it looking so good, you know, on DVD. It's been released on Blu-ray recently as well. Fantastic to have it on Blu-ray. But you know what? What we're missing, and I think this movie could really, really benefit with an audio commentary, you know? And I'm a big fan of audio commentaries. And in my opinion, a few years back in the early 2000s when, I think it was the early 2000s. Anyway, when that package of Godzilla movies that Classic Media produced came out and they had audio commentaries by Ed Gajewski, Steve Riefel, David Callett, Stuart Galbraith, and a couple of others. I honestly believe that those are some of the best audio commentaries of any movies of any genre. It really are, especially the original Japanese version of Godzilla and Godzilla versus Mothra versus Godzilla, and probably Godzilla Raids Again. These are excellent audio commentaries. And they also came out with a three pack. Battle in Outer Space, Mothra, and the H-Man. And there's audio commentaries on Battle in Outer Space and Mothra. Those are fantastic audio commentaries, too. And those guys, Stuart Galbraith, Ed Gajewski, and those few others that I mentioned, I believe that they're some of the best audio commentaries in the business. I really do. They're informative. They're funny. They're really good. When the two-pack of War of the Gargantuas and Rodan came out, and there's also a documentary called Bringing Godzilla Down to Size, an all-new documentary that's on there. It's very good. There were no audio commentaries from those. And it's really too bad because I think especially Rodan could really benefit from an audio commentary. War of the Gargantuas obviously could, but definitely Rodan, because in my opinion, of all the Toho Giant Monster movies, Rodan was their first color one, and Rodan, I believe, is the closest to the original Godzilla. I mean, it's a tragic, Rodan is just, the ending is, it's tragic, it's a tragic creature, you know what I mean? And I think that could really benefit. But getting back to the King Kong versus Godzilla, the King Kong Escapes 2-pack, they really could have benefited from an audio commentary. And I was really disappointed we didn't get any extras with those. It was just a bare bones, couple of bare bones DVDs. And I would also love to see the Japanese versions of both of these films, especially King Kong Escapes. But I understand that's pretty hard to come by, too. I have done podcasts in the past. I've been co-host. I've temporarily hosted podcasts for other shows. And one of them, we actually did an audio commentary for King Kong Escapes. And I don't believe it's up anymore. It's been a few years. But it turned out pretty good. And I don't know if a lot of people heard it. In the future, I may decide on this podcast to do audio commentaries. Not really sure yet. It is a lot of work because you have to keep talking. You know what I mean? You have to keep talking. And it's funny. I actually believe that some of the best audio commentaries is done by fans. Okay? Because a lot of times, especially these older movies, the people who are in them, who produced them, directed them, whatever, a lot of times they don't remember what happened, especially on some of the genre stuff that we like. Fans, that's another thing. They remember stuff, you know? And I may actually do audio commentaries on this. I've also done one for the 76 version of King Kong, which actually never saw the light of day. But I really think King Kong Escapes could really benefit from a good audio commentary. So we may decide to do that in the future. Well, those are my thoughts on King Kong Escapes. This is actually my first recording of the Fandom Radio podcast, and it's going to be my first one that's available to listen to. It's rough. Things will get better. I hope to get better because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I listen to a lot of really good podcasts, and I'm trying to take a cue from all of those guys who came before me. Not necessarily imitate, just to learn what they've done to be successful. So being our first recording, a little rough, it'll get better. I feel like I've rushed myself. I don't know. I feel like there was more I wanted to talk about because I love this movie so much. But truth be told, you can only talk so much about some movies. I mean, if you're a fan, obviously you can go on and on and on. But, you know, you don't want to be boring people, you know? So anyway, Fandom Radio Podcast's first recording is done. And hopefully, if you like it, let us know. I can be reached at fandomradiopodcast@gmail.com. I've also got a Facebook page that I'm starting soon. You can check us out on Facebook. I don't think there's anything there yet. Fandom Radio Podcast. That's FANDOM, Fandom, not Phantom, Fandom Radio Podcast. And the email is fandomradiopodcast@gmail.com. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you come back. Fandom Radio Podcast is off the air.